The pandemic has hit the economy hard. We all know that, but it's been especially hard on women who've been forced to leave the workforce to take care of their kids at home.
The COVID-19 pandemic is threatening the advancements women in America have made in the workforce.
The pandemic is continuing to take a toll on the workplace, especially among women.
The complete upending of quote-unquote normal life brought on by the pandemic has left a lot of us more acutely aware of social and economic injustices. Like you heard, when it comes to job loss, it is women, and specifically women of color, who've been hit the hardest during the pandemic.
The National Women's Law Center reports in December, women lost a total of 156,000 jobs. That's all the jobs that were cut that month. Women of color and in the service industry were affected the most. Meanwhile,
this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, how and why women have been the hardest hit.
If you think about unemployment, that's every 2 weeks. I was getting paid under $500. I barely was able to pay my rent, make an arrangement with this company, make arrangement with that, just to stay above the water.
Claudette Pointer from Southeast Michigan was laid off from her job last March. She was a manager at a staffing agency. And since then, she has really been struggling to get back on her feet.
I did come into the company at, I think I was at $10.75. And then, you know, gradually my pay rate started inclining. And so by the time I get to the $21 an hour, you know, life started looking so grand for me. You know, I was able to pay, you know, my bills pretty much out of one check. And so I began to start living a more of a comfortable life. And then all of a sudden COVID hit and I was only at $21 for a good month and a half. And then of course my company laid a lot of the managers, pretty much all the managers. Then I had to seek unemployment. And that was like a big slap in the face because I'm like, right while I'm getting started to like become comfortable, life took a shift.
Oh, that clip is so heartbreaking, and it's a great example of what's going to happen to so many women.
That's Betsy Stevenson. She's a labor economist and professor at the Gerald Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan. She's been looking at the bigger picture of women leaving the workforce.
So what happens when people lose their job is, of course, they lose their current income. But they also tend to fall behind. So when they get that new job doesn't often happen come at the same sort of pay rate that they had when they left, right? So Claudette just described this beautiful story of working her way up from just over $10 an hour to $21 an hour. And that real progress in her life was allowing her to live better. And now she's lost her job, and she describes being on unemployment. But the next part of this story is equally distressing, which is that she's not very likely to get hired back at $21 an hour. You know, she may end up finding a job, if she's lucky, at $15 or $16 an hour. So her story, her journey of loss isn't even over yet. And I think that is what happens for so many people who lose work. And she just really illustrates it so vividly, because once you've lost work and you have to go out and find a new job, you're starting almost back from square one. And that means that you erase years of progress that you've made in terms of, you know, promotions and raises. And when I tell this story, when we talk about this, people so often focus on, you know, the highly educated woman who's in a profession where, you know, she has to maybe take time out of the labor force because of her kids, and then she comes back and she doesn't get the promotions. But you're usually, people think, I think, naturally about people at the higher end of the income distribution when they think about that loss of wage gains that come from missing out on promotions. But that applies throughout the income distribution. And I think the story you just heard is the one I've been trying to focus on, because it means that it is why COVID has not only created greater inequality in the United States, but that inequality, that increase in inequality created by COVID, is not going to go away when COVID does.
Betsy, do we know what factors contributed to start to close that wage gap between men and women before 2020?
Well, what we've seen is a couple of things that have all been leading to closing the gender wage gap. So women have been getting more education than men along every dimension. They're more likely to go to community college. They're more likely to graduate with a college degree. They're more likely to go on and get an advanced degree. They're also doing better in college, so their grades are higher. So they're getting that sort of formal training, formal education, pursuing goals like that. And then they are working more, so they're more likely to have spent time with the same employer. When you spend time with the same employer, you tend to get raises. So that we think about that as their sort of work experience and tenure, their tenure with the same employer has been increasing so that it's now equal to that of men, roughly. And you heard that story with Claudette where she stayed with the same employer and she got raise after raise after raise. And at the end, she was earning twice what she'd been earning at the beginning. So it's sticking with the same employer. It's pursuing promotions. It's getting more education and training. All of those things had contributed to narrowing the gender wage gap, as well as, you know, efforts for women to enter professions that are not been traditionally thought of as female that tend to pay more. We've seen, you know, obviously progress for women in STEM and science. But I think the stat that I really focus on is in December 2019, women held the majority of jobs in the country. They weren't more likely than men to be employed. But if you're talking about jobs where you have an employer, you bring home a paycheck, women held most of them.
Just in terms of raw numbers.
Yeah, and I shouldn't say most of them. Women held the majority of them. So they held more of them than men did. So they ticked over 50%. But it was a really important moment because the reason they held more jobs in December 2019 than men was because what we saw in that the recovery and the economic growth between, say, 2015 and 2020 was a rise in female labor force participation, more women working. In 2019, we saw the highest share of women with young kids working that we'd ever seen in the United States before. So women with a kid under six were more likely to be at work in 2019 than they had been at any other year in our past. So we saw this just increase in female participation in employment. And of course, that also contributes to them earning higher wages. And that persisted in January of 2020. In February of 2020. And in fact, I did an interview with NPR in January 2020, which I sometimes reflect back on because I said, I cannot imagine what would dislodge women from this point of ascendancy that they're currently at. I couldn't imagine it. And the reason was I couldn't imagine a global pandemic. All right, that I couldn't imagine we would have a global pandemic that would target in-person jobs. And I think that it really highlights where, you know, how has the economy been changing and how has that impacted women? Since the beginning of the 2008 recession, so go all the way back to the end of 2007, when we, in February of 2020, we still had a million fewer jobs in that goods-producing sector. And we had added 15 million jobs in the service sector. So what's been growing over that all that time period are jobs in education and health services and business and professional services. These are jobs that women hold. Women got the majority of those additional 15 million jobs that we added. But the problem was this recession targeted those jobs that women got through the growth. And that is what has dislodged them from their position as the majority of job holders.
After a quick break, we'll talk to Betsy about what it would take for women to bounce back from these losses.
It's so depressing. I think I would tell people, don't focus on that. Focus instead on trying to figure out what can you do.
We'll be right back. Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
I want to go back to Claudette Poynter, who we just heard from a moment ago. She told Stateside that she did ultimately apply for public assistance last year to make up for lost wages. But this was, I think, not what a lot of people expect when they think about tapping unemployment benefits. So let's hear how she describes it.
I made enough money to where I didn't have to use those particular services. I don't have anything against them. So here, dealing with COVID now, none of that clicked in my head to go sign up for any of that until one of my girlfriends, she did reach out to me and she said, are you receiving food stamps? Because I was calling and asking for someone to help me get food at the time. And then one of my girlfriends asked me, she said, are you receiving food stamps? I said, no, I never even thought to do it. She said, well, they're giving out extra because of COVID. So I right away, I jumped on there and I and this is all just recently because I just got my full food stamp benefit on last week. So I've gone through this entire pandemic with very little.
Like we heard, Claudette was fortunate to get some help from SNAP benefits. The things that the government has done to this point to help, do you see them as having a measurable impact on people's quality of life, according to the indicators that economists would think about?
Well, I mean, yes. So the government has reacted quite swiftly. And it, in fact, if I look at, you know, what was in the CARES Act and what they did in March, it was an incredibly impressive, quick reaction to the situation we were in. And expanding unemployment insurance to cover so many people, giving those additional payments to make up for the fact that unemployment insurance usually pays such a small fraction of people's income, usually makes up for such a small fraction of people's income. Those additional payments were necessary to try to ensure that people who had lost their work could pay their rent and put food on the table. I think the real problem was then the government sort of ran out of steam, or you might think became more focused on partisan arguing on the Hill and less focused on getting something passed. And as a result, I think we didn't have enough benefits going into the fall. There was action taken towards the end of the year. We've got the President Biden working right now with Democrats to get additional relief passed. We're not done with COVID. We're not done with the pain of it. And we do need to be supporting families right now. You know, if you listen to Claudette, one of the things you realize is all the hand-wringing that happens in Washington, D.C. about how people will exploit benefits if we give them too much or we can't afford this. It's just wrong. People don't want to be on benefits if they don't have to be. What they want is to be able to eat and put food on the table. And this recession, like no other that I've ever seen, has disproportionately hit people at the bottom of the income distribution, while people at the top of the income distribution have had very little pain in terms of loss of income. So what we see is literally a savings glut at the top of the income distribution, people just hanging on to income that they don't know what to do with, while folks in the bottom half of the income distribution are out of savings. They've tapped into everything they have. And we really need to see more government support for folks that are out of savings that have really been struggling all year. And it's got to be a concentrated effort to combat the increase in inequality that's been caused by COVID.
What happens in society when women are less present in the workforce?
I find that a kind of hard question to answer because, first of all, I'm an optimist, and I think women are going back. I think that they're going to become the majority of job holders again. I don't think that COVID will permanently change the trajectory. And I've emphasized how we're seeing growth in the service sector in the United States. That's the basis of our economy. You always have these politicians that are emphasizing, how are we going to get manufacturing jobs back? The reality is that's rounding error on our job growth. It's just a small fraction of the economy. It's much smaller. All of the goods producing sector, there are fewer employees than there are in office and administrative support in the United States.
Wow.
So our economy, right? Like, you got to put this in perspective. Our economy is a service-based economy. That means accounting services. That means entertainment services. Service is really broad. It's much bigger than what people's, mental image of somebody bringing you a cup of coffee or a meal. But women dominate that whole sector. And I don't think you can continue to have job growth. I don't think the U.S. economy can continue to expand without bringing women back. So women will come back. I think the big question is what happens to the individual women who've really been hurt by COVID. How do we make it so that we can get Claudette back to $21 an hour? I think that's where we really have to be focused, because otherwise you could go back and interview Claudette in 3 or 4 years and find out that she hasn't still fully recovered from COVID. And that's a real tragedy. And I think we shouldn't give up as in terms of public policy until we've made sure that someone like Claudette is not only back at work, but back at work really with the same kind of footing, the same kind of work responsibilities, the same kind of productivity, and the same kind of earnings.
How much of the job loss among women is due to women who are mothers or grandmothers or aunts needing to just stop and take care of the kids and their families at the moment?
So we're definitely seeing a lot of that. And I think what was really alarming was the decrease in female labor force participation that happened in September when kids should have gone back to school and didn't. And so we just saw a lot of women drop out of the labor force. So we had two trends sort of smacking themselves in with COVID that has led to, I think, just such an enormous problem for mothers. One is that they're all like really great trends. So women have been having more children than in previous generations. This can be actually hard to see in the data because what we see is declining annual fertility rates. But what's happened is women are having children at older and older ages. That meant that for women who today are sort of in their mid-50s to sort of mid-60s, a lot of them didn't have as many children as they maybe wanted to have. But for a younger cohort of women who are, say, under 50 right now, they ended up having more children. They were more likely to have 3 children. They had more children than the previous generation, and they had them at much older ages. They also were more likely to work, right? So women more likely to be in the labor force with children than really ever before. And part of that, and then they're earning more, and they're partially earning more because they had those kids at later ages, so they had all these promotions before they had kids. So you had a lot of women who are, say, 40 to 45 years old with 3 kids at home, you have a lot of women who are, say, 35 to 45 years old that have 2 to 3 kids at home that are kind of young, doing school and need some help. And so we saw a lot of women in that sort of 35 to 40, 40 to 44 age bracket were the ones who dropped out in September. And it's just like, you know, these women were rushing forward and they hit a brick wall. I do worry very specifically about the women who have dropped out, because whenever you drop out, it's very hard to re-enter the labor force.
What do you think the women who did drop out last year might be looking at in terms of the time that they'll have to invest to recover those losses?
Well, I don't think they'll ever recover their loss. I mean, that's the problem. I don't think they'll ever fully recover, right? So we can think about, what is the loss when you drop out of the labor force? You've got the loss of the current income you're giving up. Then you've got the loss that comes from the fact that over that time period, you might have gotten a promotion or a raise. Then you get the loss of the fact that when you go back to work, you're probably going to be in a position that is below where you were before you left. And then you've got to work your way back up. The only way you ever make up all the losses is if somehow you accelerate faster than you would have had you not had COVID. It's just, the reality is that that's not that likely. So the question is, how big is that permanent loss? And do you eventually get to a place where that loss doesn't keep accumulating over time? It's so depressing. I think I would tell people, don't focus on that. Focus instead on trying to figure out, what can you do? What can you do that, you know, what do you want to do going forward? And, you know, what's the best use of your skills, and where are you going to be able to reach your goals the quickest? Because right now, your counterfactual is no longer what would have happened if we hadn't had COVID. Your counterfactual is, what's the best I can do, given that I've either had to take time out of the labor force, or maybe you haven't taken time out, but you've turned down a promotion, or you've cut your hours, or you've taken a leave of absence. All of these things are going to set you back a little bit. But what you really need to do is focus on what you can do to move yourself forward. And if you spend too much time thinking about your loss, that can be really paralyzing. And, you know, I tell my kids this all the time, like, we can't undo spilt milk, right? So we don't focus on the loss that we've had. We instead should be focusing on what we're going to do, you know, to move forward in the best possible way.
Betsy Stevenson is a labor economist and professor at the Gerald Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan. Betsy, thank you so much.
It was such a great pleasure talking with you.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find the full Stateside show each and every weekday at michiganradio.org. And don't forget, we're on the radio, too. Weekdays at 3 Eastern and a rebroadcast at 9 p.m. Today's episode was produced by Mercedes Mejia. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.